I wanted it to be as natural as possible, but I realized that while this, if you just started out, doesn't seem natural, you'll see with the examples why it's the functionally the best answer. And that's, as far as I'm concerned, what I'm after. How are we going to achieve people knowing how to make good theory without coming and have something like me check it, which just defeats the whole purpose. You've got to be able to, it's got to be self-particular done.
Okay.
All right. Now, this is the if-then. The horseshoe on its side with the open end to the left means if P horseshoe Q. So it would be written P horseshoe Q would mean, would be as if you had if written before the P, but you don't. The horseshoe always means that that's the nature of that relationship, just as the or, the little V, would represent that. If P, then Q. Means, because you can sometimes try and say it a couple of ways to make certain you have the idea right, structurally. In other words, you know, that's what I mean by the implicit connectives between premises. That can count as a deduction too. Now, what I'm saying is very, very packed. So you're probably not getting it, but don't worry about it.
Implicit meaning leading to a conclusion?
No, I mean that you could have a premise A, second premise B, the first premise would be A equals B, second premise would be C equals B, a deduction from the first two premises could be A or C equals B. That would be a connection that had not been made but was implicit in the two premises. That's a deduction as opposed to a premise. So that theory construction, the combination, now I'm talking technically, of sets or classes, that is, the ideas, and what makes the difference between human beings and animals are the elaboration, the elaborate connections we're able to make. That's rationality. That's the key. Rationality is based on connectives. Logic is about connectives and making those distinctions. Theory construction is the connectives between statements, which is a theory. You've got the thing checked out if it holds up. Now that might sound overly simple, but I mean, people have done life's work, you know, quibbling about one little distinction between two set theories on one particular kind of characteristic. So if then we use the horseshoe on its side, and that means P only if Q. Not if and only if, that's a different, that's biconditional, either way. Horseshoe, you cannot switch around the other way. It goes one way. In other words, you would not say, if you say you need a necessary condition of existence is oxygen, this would be if you have an human existence, then you have oxygen. You could not say, if you have oxygen, you then have a human mm-hmm. existence. Do you mm-hmm. see? Mm-hmm. See, some people call it one way. I would like, I mean, look, you run into things of taste, too. I'm basically a purist. I like stripped down stuff. I don't like debris. And I like as fine distinctions as possible, partly because you are dealing, you know, with people's lives. But that's a matter partly of taste and value judgment. So that's the if-then. And there's a lot packed into that, and a lot of understanding of all philosophy that you get out of that, and relationships. Relationships or connectives are what make reason. Like they have the monkey with the stick in the cage and the banana outside, right? The connection is any kind of relationship that goes on between that stick and that banana, whether it's pulling it in, whether it's pushing it out, whether it's knocking it on top of somebody, all of those are the connectives. The connectives are what make life in that sense. In other words, any movement or combination or pulling apart, all of those are connectives, or causality. If then is your causality, cause and effect, so you can see how key that's going to be for us. What causes oppression? You know, necessary would be you have to have an oppressor, but is it a sufficient condition of oppression?
No.
There's no relationship going on there. What is the cause and effect relationship going in?
An oppressor is an oppressed. Somebody that they're oppressing.
Yeah, but the connection
causes oppression.
But it's what. It's the relationship between the oppressor and the oppressed. And it's not a biconditional because you're not saying it's the same. In other words, it didn't go either way. It is not an activity that is going back and forth in equal amounts. That would be what you were saying is a relationship between the two, something that's happening between. If you melted that down in terms of logic, you would be saying, well, oppression happens. Well, that's another set. You've got oppression. Some set, right? You break that down. What is oppression? What is the activity of oppression? What is it consisting? What is necessary to it, but what is sufficient? What is the structure? When you're talking about sufficient, too, you're talking about the structure, the very slavery. Okay. When somebody will say, this is a classic example, say for me, a dummy example. Or like marriage, they'll say, well, can't we get rid of, we all know that there are some little bad laws around. Can't we get rid of those laws and keep the institution? We say, the institution itself, if you examine its structure or its, if you will, necessary and sufficient conditions, those necessary and sufficient conditions are in and of themselves unacceptable. People will say, well, can't you have the slave and the master equal and still keep slavery? Well, the structure of the institution is such that it is equivalent to, that is a biconditional, to unpaid labor and loss of freedom improvement. If you take away those two unfortunate aspects, you've got no slavery. See why all of this is really important, how it works. Okay, then, the if-then, the three bars is biconditional, which you very, 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 very seldom see, and it's a special thing. Remember we were talking about identity, and no two things are the same. That's that necessary and sufficient. What you're saying, necessary and sufficient condition is that, in fact, that is equal to the phenomenon. So you would have to say a very specific kind of amount so you would put in paren. That's why you need the restricted amount to keep the phenomenon, because there's no such thing as total equality, or else you don't have two separate things. Because the only true biconditional in that sense would be B, okay, keeping A as a phenomenon, A, biconditional A. That's the only true identity. And even then you could quibble in a philosophy of, this comes into truth, philosophy of truth, semantic form. Philosophy of logic, in a sense. Philosophy of logic, philosophy of truth, some people say, is under that, in some sense.
In other words, if you have, like...
That there are even that one A is over here and one A over there, but they wouldn't be exactly identical. But what we're saying instead, in Necessary and Sufficient, is A equals B plus C, and that can't be, because it must be some, it must be restricted in some way, so that in certain special amounts, like fire, right? You said fire in a specified area. You couldn't have a general. Let's see. Okay. If you're talking about a fruit, like apples, you might talk about necessary and sufficient amount of color, taste, so on. But to say that color, taste, so on, were the same things as apples without saying a quantitative or restricted difference specification is what then makes it equal to A. Not in a general sense. So it would, that was what we were having trouble with, remember? How is necessary and sufficient different from just B and C together? Mm-hmm. And that's what you only get out of using truth functional symbols in theory construction. Now this has never been done quite this way because nobody ever needed it as bad as we did, so that's why I'm just, you know, I'm doing theory construction all the time in terms of problems I see and what's the best way to get at them. This seems the best way. Now, just as a, I don't know, just to show you something that I did with it so that you see how it comes into general theory. You're the first people in the whole world to hear it, right? Let me see if I got everything I want to put down. Theory construction, inspiration. You get ideas from problems. Remember we were saying you have a problem, you have a contradiction, and it's like saying, well, like say for instance, the example I used was being in love with shit, consistently. There's some tension, there are all these philosophical terms like the English school where you understate everything. Like if somebody says to you from the Oxford or the analytic school, I'm not quite sure what you mean, they're saying you're so fucking dumb, you shouldn't be allowed loose. if they say there's a certain tension, it means you've got a wild contradiction. So there is a certain tension between being in love with shit, right? Consistently. You begin to say, well, somehow love is a positive response, or it would seem to be. Then how do you make it jive with what you're responding to? You have two choices. Either something's wrong with the connection, or it's fully appropriate because you're shit. So naturally you would be attracted to somebody who gives you a true reflection of yourself, you know? No, but I mean, this is what you get out of theory construction, you see. A lot of laughs. Okay, I wrote it all down. I've been working on this a lot. Talk about the mad inventor, right? Inspiration, ideas from the problems. And that's where you get the idea for, you got an idea, right? What are you going to do with these two things? You know there's something interesting out there. I say if it feels, smells, and tastes like shit, believe it, right? You move in, you say, that, how interesting. We got the most interesting problem in the world with women. It's a mess. Plus the critical faculty. That is whether it's true. One, you've got an interesting problem. You may have an idea of the direction to go into. Theory construction will construct your theory for you if you have a problem and some idea even of where to go for the solution. Now, almost everybody has that. The theory construction as a system can help you start fooling around, and all of a sudden, you know, I used to have trouble writing more than one or two pages. And theory construction helped me then to just know different things to try out. Modally, to get which direction to go into. Then you have to check it to see if it's true. Now you do these two things constantly. It's an interdependent process. So you see this and you say, yeah, but what if I, you know, and you look at it, and you, when I said, you remember the first premise, you beat it on the side of the table, you look it upside down, everything. That's what the logic does for you. The more sophisticated, the better. Just gives you that many more ways to check it out. But even the most basic, rudimentary ways of checking things out have never been done on women or really political theory generally, from the position of oppressed people. So, first we have set theory class definitions. We've already gotten into that. Two, you have the connectives between the sets. Then you have the connectives. Now, these are connectives between premises and also between deductions. A deduction cannot contain any sets that have not already been introduced, otherwise you have a new premise. Remember I said no theory is purely inductive or purely deductive. If it's purely deductive, then it's just circular. A equals A, you get from this A, if A then A, yes, and then A if A, and so you're no place. So you always have to have some new material. A premise is like A, B, C. There are also such things as suppressed premises. That means premises that you've left out but haven't thrown your theory off. Try not to suppress any premises because they're usually, it's going to throw your theory off. It's something you didn't account for.
Excuse me. Could you repeat what I said? Deductions cannot include...
Okay, the difference between a premise and a deduction...
Yeah. But you said deductions cannot include...
They cannot include... A deduction cannot include any set. Because the word set bother people, it means class. Mm-hmm. The simplest definition, I'm using the simplest definition, which is any group of individuals or instances sharing one common characteristic, which is your functional term, A, so, and then paren X, paren is that there are, that this is a universe of discourse, is what you say. Once you put that little X after it with the paren, you're saying that this has a universe of discourse, that is, instances. You can characterize those instances, which should be characterized within your set. That is, like it's a null set because actually it's a, like unicorns. You know, it's an imaginary thing. So this would not interfere with, you're still having instances of nothing. So that you, that's a set or a class. Do people have any, see most people when you say class, right away they think Marxist. They don't have the biggest idea what Marx meant, which is pretty hard for anybody to figure out what he meant. He was a lousy logician. So, but some people can't get that out of their minds about Marx class. Do people prefer set, class? What should we agree on? Just
set.
We take a vote? No, I mean, do people, you're not saying anything, Len. Do you have anything?
You want to take a vote? I've got used to both of them interchangeably.
Mm-hmm. Anybody?
I don't care.
Mm-hmm. Sets equal class. Class equals sets.
Except the class has the connotation to it that can throw people off in terms of it has to be economic. And, you know, now, there, it's a good example to say that the definition of oppressed people, there, see, here we have a very good example. I knew I'd get that bastard someday, right? Necessary and sufficient. The Marxist concept of class, simplified, is that qualitatively different and like hierarchy and stepped economic incomes is the basis of class distinction. So that economic discrimination equals class distinction, that is a class system. Anytime you have a class, you've got to have a class system, that's your universe of discourse. So you see what we're getting into already. That's why once you say women, and you define what you mean by women, you have a class system. Now, who else is in that system? So it was logic. I was very much, well, I wouldn't oppose, I just said I didn't know the answer. The first time somebody said to me, do you think men are the enemy? It was like at the beginning, and I just said, I don't know, but I got down, I worked it out with my little logic, and I thought, uh-oh. Because you couldn't get away from it. If it's a universe of discourse, if you define women by their sex, then the universe of discourse of any class system, because a class, all right, the characteristic by which you define a group of people.
Could you repeat that Marxist concept?
Okay. Say, a class system as opposed to a class. Now, Marx's concept of class, that's why he's a very poor logician, he didn't make this clear, comes from a concept of a class system posited on economic distinctions. The male-female class system, which, you know, I often say people, it's amazing, you pound it and pound it in speeches and they just don't get what you're talking about, and it's so basic, is based on a sexual distinction. Then your class structure functions, the relationships between these classes, the practices, the institutions which lock them in, the roles that appear then within those, are built on that initial characteristic. But what Marx, I mean, he made, you know, someday somebody is going to have nothing better to do, like there are a lot of people in universities like that. They're going to take apart all the things wrong with Marxist, you know, the mess, that he equivocates. That is, he doesn't distinguish between class as a concept and the class system and its basis or its reference, its universe of discourse. So that what he is saying is that class, in a political sense, always refers to economic gradation. It's always defined, it's quantified by economics. So that he is saying that that is a necessary and sufficient condition for the concept of class in political theory. Mm-hmm. Now that's pretty bad, pretty wild. And people don't catch that? I mean, that's, so you can see why it doesn't do people too much good, for whom that is not a necessary and sufficient condition. That is, where there are other characteristics that are required if you're going to say necessary and sufficient, that is, equal to. For instance, the oppression of women might have a combination of five different sets, characteristic sets combined. So that whenever you have one, two, three, four, five, you have the oppression of women. Then you would have, this would be absolutely interchangeable. Now maybe economic discrimination is a necessary condition to the oppression of women, but it's not sufficient, much less necessary and sufficient. Do you see? Mm-hmm. See, that's where logic, it hasn't really ever been used in that truly functional sense. But if we could only do it, you know. So that's the Marx. That's why when people then say to me, like I've had many Marxists, well, not so much because I don't talk to so many anymore, but they used to say to me, housewives are irrelevant because they're unproductive labor. That is, they have no economic equivalence. They're not even on the unemployment. So you'd say, that's 2/3 of our people, though. I mean, you're talking about. Never mind, they don't count. Because
class means what Marx said. That's why I said I'd much rather have a live man to deal with than a dead one. So that's, it's really, really, all the political theory that you see around, when I say Marxist potboilers, they're still using that concept of class, which is not a concept of class, but of a class system based on relationships between classes in a given universe of discourse. Now, do you catch? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sound like I'm nitpicking, but you see the enormous significance of that nitpicking. Why you have to look at reality. Logic is a way of checking yourself all the time and saying, like, I get an idea, and then I take it apart and say, is that reasonable? Reasonable meaning, does it check out? So once you have a concept of class, which is the classic symbol philosophical one of a group of objects brought together on the basis of a single common characteristic, then you have to, when you think of class systems, okay, so I just want to, like I said, this was written several times, I just happened to run across this. I don't know if it's, it's some of the things I've been talking about, as I said, it's more condensed now, and I'll put this so that you see the interest of what you get out of it and how it also illuminates to you, it gives you ideas. So that what I was saying, I wanted to finish that about deductions before I gave you the example. That you have connectives between the sets in a given statement or premise, right? Then the third step is what gives you your theory construction is you also have the connectives between statements. And that's your theory construction. These connectives. And that it's when you get to that point that things are revealed to you through the connections you didn't know. It's at that point where sometimes the mechanics of it take you over rough spots and reveal whole new things that hadn't occurred to you. That's why I hate also to write theory construction, because you find out you have to give up a lot of stuff that you never would have sat down and started working on that if you'd known that. So the distinction between a premise and a deduction, or that a premise is in each case, it has a different symbol, it's a different set. Naturally, you can make symbols represent whole statements too. So that you might have the first premise A and B, and you might decide to make A and ampersand B rem equals C, and you have a statement that is a combination of sets and connectives, can then also be symbolized by one function, but it must always be spelled out like in a legend on a map. God said, keep it up at the top, just exactly what you're doing with those symbols, or else, I mean, one little slip and you're gone. A deduction cannot contain any sets that have not appeared in the theory, prior to the combination. Deduction, keep in mind, is a connective between premises. Those are my notes. premises like A, B, C. Deduction can't contain any sets. Or, now the difference here, can't contain any sets. Although, if along the way you had wanted to say A and B together were going to equal C, it could contain that, but it would have had to have been made clear. Although you can sometimes, as you'll see, maybe I can skip back and forth in terms of logical deductions, long, long set theory, that you will have people then introduce new notation. Like, maybe if the first prime set A plus B, maybe in the fifth step, and you always label, you know, first premise, second premise, deduction is not number, usually, because it isn't new, and this is something that could only have come out of what has already been agreed upon as true. And that's when you have validity. Was that a valid deduction? Had you really used all those symbols and connectives? That's what makes it valid or not. What makes it true or not is whether the premises were in fact the case and properly characterized sets. Your sets hadn't been improper.